Hello everyone, welcome to Hardly Casual. We are here to talk about what we've been playing, what we've been doing, what we've been loving and hating. We're going to start off with something I'm actually really excited for now that I couldn't care less before because I was worried that it wasn't going to live up to the hype.
Mighty Number 9.
No. Thank you. PlayStation VR. Andy, you were the biggest proponent of this, and you were the one who has been sold from the get-go. Now that we've touched it and experienced it, what did you love? What did you hate? What do you want to see improved? How was your VR experience?
Yeah, so, you know, VR has been, a theory for a very long time. It's not been anything new. I think I remember reading and hearing about it in elementary school, and I'm 28, so... I mean, it's not a concept. It's a concept that's been around. So
it was huge in the 90s. Yeah. 90s was like the time for VR to be talked about. It was that's the thing. Like I mentioned in my recent article, it's a thing that was a product of cinema. Like it's cinema brought it. I mean, sure, it was in science fiction novels dating back even further, but 90s cinema really brought it to a forefront. Kenny, you're giving me that look.
I was just gonna say, if you've seen Lawnmower Man,
which was in 93. That's may not be the earliest virtual reality film, but it's the earliest, you know, big budget.
It was the one that like that staples in my mind to VR. Yeah. That and The First Kid with Sinbad.
Okay, yeah,
yeah, that had some VR in it.
I forgot about that. Yeah, First Kid and Johnny Mnemonic, Virtuosity, Brain Scan. Like the list goes on. The 90s was full of virtual reality.
Yep.
But yeah, Andy, you were saying.
Yeah, and. So, you know, hearing about it in the 90s and just thinking to yourself on what kind of implications this would have in gaming and just wondering what games would be like in VR, you know,
it was the magical dreamsicle being dangled at our face that we could never taste.
And, you know, for the past, I guess, 4 years now, we've known about the Oculus. It's been in the works. There have been multiple dev kits go out for it. We've seen YouTubers use the Oculus, and I think one of the most infamous... YouTube videos I've seen of VR is probably the elderly lady with the Oculus headset on, and they're like taking her to different locations, and she's like freaking out.
That she's never got to go.
She's never been to, and she's like freaking out over it, and it's just like, wow, you know,
like a bucket list thing for this lady. Like it's super cool.
So yeah, I've been super excited, been dying to try it. I've had my PlayStation. I pre-ordered the PlayStation VR the moment you could, so I've got mine pre-ordered, but. After E3, I saw a announcement where they were going to have these kiosks set up for you to come and try it out. So I went to the website and typed in my zip code, and boom, there it was, you know, Knoxville, which is 50 minutes from where I live. And so I made plans that moment. I was with my girlfriend, and I was like, we're going to Knoxville next weekend, and we're going to do this. And then, you know, the next day I mentioned to you guys, and, you know, you guys a little bit further than I do.
Road trip!
And we all, it was like, you know, road trip time. I was like, awesome, let's do this.
Yeah, because objectively for you and I, Kenny, it was like
hour and 15.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Depending on how fast you want to drive.
Yeah, yeah. For me, it would have been an hour and a half. For you, it's like closer to an hour.
Sure.
Leadfoot.
I would say about an hour and 20 minutes for you guys. Yeah. It's about a 50-minute drive from Athens, and... From Athens to Cleveland is about 25 minutes, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
So we made the trip up this past Saturday, and you guys got there before I did, so you guys had already played it or experienced it. But
yeah, I did a double take. I'd been in twice.
But you guys, you guys were skeptical of it going.
Yeah,
in.
Definitely.
I was super skeptical,
and I've been excited from the get go.
I was almost cynical about it.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah,
but. Getting there and hearing your reactions to it and watching the other people try the headset on and play their tech demos. Everyone walked away really surprised by it.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Like, even outside of us, outside of, you know, my nephew who we took with us, no one, every single person there enjoyed what they did.
Yep. Yeah, everyone walked away with a big smile on their face and was like, holy crap, this is for real.
And that's the thing I noticed. There is a specific VR look that everyone has about them when they walk out of the headset, when they get out of the demo. And that look is like kind of like this, it's getting back to reality look, but it's also this look of wow. Like, that was cool.
Yeah. Well, I think you and I talked like a little bit while we were there about, you know, when you first got the headset, you thought, okay, I'm going to feel like there's two small screens in front of my eyes, and yeah. like everything's going to feel very like, oh, this is some little gimmick.
Mm-hmm. But it didn't.
It didn't. And like the cool thing was, whenever I took off the, I played Eve Valkyrie and Battle Tanks?
Battle Zone.
When I took off the VR headset after Battle Zone, I remember like looking up and being like, man, I feel like this Best Buy is tiny.
Yes, like exact same feeling.
Like the way that the VR made you feel, it made you feel like you were immersed in this large world.
You don't feel claustrophobic.
No.
In the headset, if
no,
anything, you feel a little bit of that claustrophobia or spatial awareness, like your brain just kind of confuses itself because you feel like the retail environment that you're doing this demo in just became smaller.
Yeah,
because everything feels
absolutely.
So huge inside the VR headset.
Yeah, it was really unique and a neat experience.
I likened it unto kind of like your first experience with a log flume ride or a roller coaster, to where you get off of it and you're just like, I don't know, I can't, my brain hasn't pieced apart exactly what just happened to me, but my body knows that I liked it.
Yeah, and honestly, like a roller coaster, like whenever when you're playing the Eve Valkyrie demo, you get launched out of a tube Battlestar Galactica style out mm-hmm. the side of a plane or out of the side of a spacecraft. And the first time you do a barrel roll in that demo, I don't know about you guys, but my stomach was like up in my throat. Like I felt like I was going down the hill on a big roller coaster.
I had this feeling like my legs and my stomach just kind of sunk down into the chair. Like just... I was feeling those G forces without
even experiencing
them. Yeah, without being anywhere close to a G force.
Andy, did you experience that as well or no?
Yeah, whenever I did the Eve Valkyrie, but whenever I got shot out of the tube is when I felt it. My experience with it wasn't perfect, and I still had an amazing time with it because
it turns out your reticle was not synced.
Yeah, the reticle for my missiles and your.
So you had a technical issue where you weren't shooting in your fighter jet or your fighter craft where you should have been shooting.
And also, whenever we got the headset put on me, I had some light bleed coming in through the nose. And
that's something I experienced with my first try of it. But the second time I sat down and tried it, I really... I wasn't afraid of breaking the headset. And the presenter, the Sony rep, allowed me to... fool with it and get it to where it felt comfortable, and at that point it really felt great. I was able to sink it down right at the correct spot on my eyes, nothing was blurry. I just had an optimal experience, especially the second time.
Yeah, and I don't know about you guys, but I know whenever I put it on like my first time, I kind of felt almost like I shouldn't be like moving around all that much, mm-hmm. like just because I felt like, oh, I'm in a Best Buy, I shouldn't My second time through the line, mm-hmm. like, I really, like, started looking around and,
exploring. The first time, you're pretty reserved, and I tried to break that mold because I knew every single person who was going into this just, like, treating it like a TV on their face.
Right.
But then, once you said the second time, people that are going through it, or maybe if they had a nice long demo, they get to a point where they just kind of break that mold because you kind of forget that you're in a Best Buy.
Right.
You forget what's going on, because the headset's, nice and loud on your ears as well, so you're really soaking in the audio environment as well as what you're seeing. And it gets to that point where you do end up bending down and looking around and crouching and seeing up close.
It, like, I know with Battlezone, whenever I was strafing in the tank, like, I was strafing one way and looking to my, like, I think I was strafing left and looking to my right.
Yeah.
And then I would pull my tank around to face the direction mm-hmm. I was trying to shoot. But it was just that really cool feeling of, as my tank turned, my head turned with the tank because... you felt like you were in that tank and that you were a part of that machine.
Definitely.
It was a
really
neat experience.
I would have sworn that if I didn't know better that you guys were pulling my chair and scooting it along the ground.
Yeah, and honestly, it was a one-to-one experience. Like,
absolutely. I can't believe that. I still can't believe that. Like, no frame hitching, no screen. I was sure. I was absolutely certain there would be screen tear.
Yeah.
No screen tear.
Yeah, I will say the fidelity was a little bit lower on, like, Eve Valkyrie. Like, the fidelity wasn't... I mean, it looked good, and it looked like, you could tell it was relatively high
depth. But you can also tell that that's not a problem with the hardware. That's the software. That's Eve's...
Right.
Eve may not have the optimal build.
Right.
That may have been an older build of the game.
Very
Whereas
true.
Battlezone, no blurriness, completely clear. It ran great. And Eve ran fine as well.
Yeah.
But it did visually have some of that blur on your peripheries.
But Battlezone, I'll agree. Like, it was fantastic.
I can't wait to see more games.
Yeah.
I want that optimal reason for me to purchase this at this point because... I'm not willing to say that it's a day one purchase, but I am very, very interested, and I want to see more great things come.
And I think here soon we're going to go. There's a little store in the mall here in Cleveland that has a Vive.
Yeah,
and I think we're going to plan a trip to go up and see that. Yeah, as
we
well.
Need, I think we're at the point where we need to test out the other VR experiences so we can do a compare contrast and really wrap up. You know what? Depending on if you're a budget gamer or a rich gamer, if you're well off, you know, what's the optimal VR experience for you?
And I think I've read that the PlayStation VR may even allow some stuff on PC to be played.
Absolutely.
Which would be really, really cool. I thought the PlayStation VR was fantastic.
Yeah, and I think what it's going to end up being is I'm making my bold claim now that Oculus is going to end up going away just because of how they treated their customers, how they are as a company. But I think HTC is here to stay, and I think PlayStation VR is here to stay. And I think what it may end up being is one may not be so greater than the other in that it may be, hey, do you want salt or do you want pepper on your steak?
Yeah, I agree. Personally, I would love to buy an HTC Vive. Honestly, I love HTC as a company.
Oh, yeah. It's a great company.
I've had two of their cell phones, and I've loved both of them. I didn't think that the M8 or anything could beat the HTC M8, and now I've got the M10, and it's even better.
Yeah.
So I feel like their headset must be just as good.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things.
But I just don't have $800
to draw. On a visual scale, comparing the two, I do have to give the leg up to Sony because it's just that it looks like this great Tron helmet.
See, I actually like the Vive a little bit more.
It looks good. It does.
I think for me, like, I just like how techie it looks. It looks
from
you know,
the front. From the
yeah,
front.
It's all
straps. You know,
yeah,
it's
that's
all,
true.
Like Velcro straps.
Yeah, and honestly, like the PlayStation, other thing, and I haven't tried out the Vive, so I can't say for sure. But the wires didn't seem very intrusive on the PlayStation.
I was expecting to feel like a Predator.
Yeah,
like
me
big,
too.
Big dread, you know, alien dread sticking out the back of my head, and that's what the wires.
On the way home from Knoxville, I was telling my friend that like that's one thing. I was like, you know what? I know that thing was hooked up, you know, to the little to the black box.
In quite a few places, too.
But that one thing is I did not notice the wires at all.
Yeah.
I'm really glad to hear that.
The headset, super comfortable. Like,
it was.
I make the statement, it didn't feel like a helmet. It felt like a nice hat that just happened to fold over my eyes.
Yep.
that's absolutely
I think the only thing that I can say negative is there's some padding right underneath, like right where it sits on your eyes, like right underneath that there on your, like the bone on your cheeks. I think that might get quite sweaty after like an hour or so gaming just because it was like that leather type material.
Okay. I didn't have that issue, but I mean, it may be just dependent on experience or length in it as
well. Yeah, exactly.
You know, it could even be come down to like facial structure. You know, everyone has a different shaped face.
Yeah, that's very true, depending on how much contact it has with your skin.
And then each person, you know, every person sweats to a different degree or has different types of oily skin. So,
I thought the headset was
super. It was really encouraging, too, not only to see us enjoy it, but also see people that you could tell have played little to no games experience as well, just because, hey, we're here at Best Buy, we're seeing this thing going on, let's just stand in line and see what it's like, you know, just like a nice little thing. But it was also really cool to see a younger generation, see my 15-year-old nephew now, go into it and just have an experience that I wish I could have had at his age.
Yeah, he really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
it was
a cool
thing to see.
He went through it. He went through the line three times, did three experiences with it, and was ready to do every single one if time-wise I would have allowed him. But sadly, you know, we had other places to be. But his first experience with VR was just like this magical thing that I'm really glad that I could have seen, because it's something that, once again, at his age and younger, that I fantasized about from that, you know, having cinema show us what VR potentially was, quote-unquote. And for him to go through this subnautical experience and to be in this diver's cage, whatever that experience was called, and to have a, you know, I'm seeing stingrays and I'm seeing jellyfish, and then to get to the point where a shark attacks the cage and stuff.
Yeah.
And to see, I mean, I'm so glad I got those pictures, but just to see him, like, coiled up and pushing back, you know, against the shark that was attacking him that's not really there in real life. Just pure magic.
It was really neat. Yeah,
pure,
it was fun.
Pure virtual magic.
It was also cool to be there and, like, to talk to other people who were using it. Because, I mean, you know, we're not video game journalists by any means, but, like...
But we're in that sphere, and we're so ingrained with video games in our daily lives because it's a very real hobby to us on a daily scale.
But, like, to talk to these people that, you know, either A, weren't super big gamers, or B, that were just people who were interested and wanted to know more.
Yeah.
Like, we were...
You had people come up to you and were talking that you could tell do not play games at all.
Right, yeah, exactly. But, like, the fun thing for me was to be able to sit there and help out the Sony rep. I mean, we were able to kind of answer questions for her, so she's, you know, so it made the line move faster.
Yeah,
and like that was a really neat experience for us. Like I thought that was fun, and you know, I hope that, you know,
I mean, you had people there who didn't have any interest before, maybe had slight interest, and afterwards were saying, "What day does it come out?
Yeah,
how much does this cost?" Yeah, and then to hear, you know, I think I know you're going to this, to hear this lady, this older lady, say, you know, oh, 400?
I've got to get me one of those.
Yeah, only 400? That's it?
Yeah.
I've got to get me one of those. Yeah, like that exact thing.
Yeah,
like,
she was standing there asking all kinds of questions, and it was really cool.
You got there, Andy, but it was really cute just to see this older lady. So I need this. I need this in my life. This is for the PS4? Oh, I'm getting this.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got to wait till October 13th. Oh, man.
Yeah, it was just such a unique experience. Like, it's something like whenever I put it on, I know I had to have the biggest, dumbest smile on my face just because, like, you put it on, you're like, holy shit, this is real. Yeah. This is happening.
Even the most reserved people, I feel like, had a smirk, if nothing else.
Yeah, you know, watching some of the other people play, like, they didn't move their head around or, like, you know, I feel like some people were embarrassed, you know, because
I think that's what it was. A lot of people felt like they were being watched or, like, they're, you know.
Yeah, that, or they had their significant other with them and
the
they didn't want to look.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, and like me, I was just like, okay, you know, I want to get in this experience at its fullest. Mm-hmm. So it was such a cool experience. So, Andy, you only got to try out Eve. Do you wish you would have got to try out any of the other demos? Or
yeah, well, I would like
you're going back, right?
Yeah, I plan on going back, not this weekend, but the next.
Okay.
I've got a group of friends that are in Knoxville, and plan on meeting up with them and hanging out with them and going back to Best Buy and trying
you
it gotta
out. Make sure they try it as well.
Yeah, I mean, they want to try it, but yeah, we're going to do that. I think I'm going to do the battle zone.
Yeah,
that one looked really interesting, so I want to try that one.
Very cool.
I want to put my girlfriend in it and get her to do the Shark Tank one.
Yes.
Okay.
Because, I mean, she's not a gamer, but that, I don't imagine you can...
No, you're just watching, you're looking around, you're in a diving tank, or you're in a diving cage, rather, and you're experiencing what's going on, and it looked great. Like
it looked beautiful.
Visually, it did look beautiful. Like, that shark looked like a shark.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know about you guys, but, like, since we tried out the VR, I have done nothing but thought of the VR.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had a dream about it that very night, and I'm the type that I don't necessarily dream about something unless it's really had a good place in my awareness factor. You know, if it's something that's been ingrained upon my, you know, whatever happened that day or something I thought about a lot, and that just waking up the next morning after having that dream, and the dream was basically just a replay of exactly what happened. You know, so I just experienced the same experience again in dream form.
Yeah.
But regardless, that kind of waking up from that, it showed to me, hey, you know, this really was something. This is something special.
I think the thing that stood out to me the most was there was a bit where I was flying in Eve Valkyrie, and there was a ship exploding beside me, and I'm chasing down two other pilots to kill. And, like, I look over to my right, and there's explosions and chunks of things flying out at me. And that just felt like my heart rate went up.
Yeah, my heart rate went up, and I had that moment where things were flying at me from the you know, the enemy ships that were, you know, exploded at that point. And, you know, it's traveling through zero-G very quickly towards my ship. And I'm just like, I need to move.
Yeah.
Like, I'm ducking my head, kind of, and I'm, like, preparing for a collision. And I'm like, wait, there's not going to be any collision. Like, you have that gap in consciousness. To where, you know, we've said it many times, that lizard part of your brain takes over, and you're kind of in a little bit of freak out mode, and then you're like, oh, wait, I'm it's okay, you're wearing a helmet, you're playing a game.
Like, I honestly do think, though, like, how are games like Overwatch or No Man's Sky or...
It's very exciting to think about.
Those type of games just get me super pumped for this thing. Like, if we can get Overwatch on, you know, VR, oh man, you've got me sold.
Yeah. Things like that, man. Ugh. I like VR. I like it, and I'm glad and happy to say that I can stand here before you guys and be legitimately excited for VR.
Yep, I think everyone is. Andy, you excited for VR?
I can't wait to do Resident Evil 7.
Oh, nope. I'm terrified. No.
Nope.
I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if I'm that brave. Just having the experience that I had with Battlezone and you know the flinching through Eve Valkyrie, I don't know that I can take horror in VR yet.
Kenny will not be playing that game on VR.
I may end up. Sure, I may end up doing it, but it's going to take some zeal.
I don't think I can. I think I'm past my point with horror games.
Okay.
That's like, you know, a lot of kids love Five Nights at Freddy's.
Uh-huh.
And I can't do it. I think that's...
Okay.
You know, that's a young man's game.
Okay. Yeah, horror's a young... Okay, I can see that. I can see that. I'm not ready to give up those young man ties just yet, then.
Yeah. When you get my age, John.
In our difference of less than a year. Kitty, jeez. Okay. Moving away from PlayStation VR, I think that wraps it up. I just want to jump into this first one, because it's kind of a rather large topic that's been poo-pooed on quite a bit. Mighty No. 9, it's here. Andy and I both crowdfunded it. We're both pretty big Mega Man fans. Him even more so than me, I would say. I'm a big fan of Keiji Inafune, what he's done. The Mega Man Legends series was great. X was an awesome series. Even the original, I find things to love. And there's so many... I feel like every Mega Man series that has come about, there's been something I loved about each of them. So it's with much... I'm very sad to say that Mighty No. 9 is a painfully average game with... amateurish level design that I wish that I could enjoy.
You know, I've not played the game. Let me preface by saying that. But I've heard the first level of the game is by far the best level of the game. You guys' thoughts?
I don't even know if I would say that. I mean,
really?
there were some neat environments, but it just really, like I said, amateurish level design to where I feel like I'm dying because the game didn't do a good job of telling me its mechanics.
Yeah.
It didn't do a good job of telling me what all is possible within the realm of the game. Insta-death is a big problem. Did you have that as well, Andy?
Do you have lives?
That's the other great thing that carries over from a bygone era of arcade games is you have two lives by default starting out in addition to the one that you're actively playing, but you can set it in the options up to 9. You can never do infinite. And, I mean, at that point, why not set it to 9? Because there's not even a trophy tied behind.
That's going to be my next question.
Yeah,
was there a trophy?
It's completely arbitrary and feels forced. And this game feels like a mishmash of really old game design, you know, 2006 game design, and then just a very, very small hint of modern game design. And it feels like my first indie game. Like, that's what it feels like, which it shouldn't feel like behind this team. This team has made, you know, NT Creates has made games that I enjoy.
Not to mention... the amount of money they got to make this game.
Exactly. It's just, it's kind of inexcusable. I understand it gets a lot of hate, and I don't hate the game, but it is painfully average. And Andy?
I really don't know what to say about it. It's a huge disappointment. The game, I played it. I didn't even know about the 9 lives thing. I didn't know you could set that, but I played it. It was 3 hours for me to beat it. It was okay. I had my fun with it, but
very short game.
As far as it being a spiritual, the thing is, like, we were told this was going to be a spiritual successor to Mega Man, and this was far from it. So that's kind of the biggest disappointing thing about this.
And that's the thing, like, it's not, if you want to piece apart what it is as a Mega Man game, quote unquote, it's not the original Mega Man games. It doesn't feel like the original Mega Man games. It doesn't quite feel like X series. It definitely is not anything close to Mega Man Legends. It's just, it feels like that imposter syndrome, you know?
Well, I think it tries to play a little bit closer to the original Mega Man games because, you know, you don't have any armor upgrades, which that wasn't really introduced until the X series. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it was okay. You know, I thought the game was really easy. My personal opinion, the game was super easy. So a lot of the enemies, there's no enemy diversity. I saw this what felt like the same enemy a thousand times.
Even the boss fights, they all kind of feel repetitious because you're technically doing the same thing in most of the boss fights.
Now, I did enjoy the boss fights.
Did you?
I will say that. Like, for the most part, I thought all the boss designs were really good.
Mm-hmm. I just feel like gameplay-wise, what you're doing in them just didn't switch it up enough.
Well, the problem is for me, you know, I played them to the weakness.
Yeah.
So, like, my first one was a challenge, but I beat the first boss and then moved on and started beating them by their weaknesses. And basically any Mega Man's like that. Once you have the weakness to the boss, it's a pushover. So that's how it was for me in Mighty No. 9. Was like, you know, beating them by their weaknesses, just running
right
through.
But I mean,
right,
for $4 million, I expect him to have more. I expect this team to do more. NT Creates has made great games in the past. Keiji Inafune has been behind great games. There's no reason that with this amount of money it shouldn't be. You know, everyone compares it most recently to games like Shovel Knight. You know, Shovel Knight's a direct contender.
Which made a lot less money on the Kickstarter.
It made a lot less. The Kickstarter was after Mighty No. 9, and it was wildly successful.
Well, like to put in perspective, Divinity's Original Sin
also
made $2 million mm-hmm. on their Kickstarter campaign, and that game was massive. I never felt like I've talked about it on the podcast before. I've played that game probably over 100 hours easily,
mm-hmm.
and yet like I still don't feel like I've got all the secrets of that mm-hmm. game. I've heard a lot of people say you beat Mighty Number 9 once you feel like you've gotten all you're going to get out of it. Like,
I mean, you can unlock the additional character, whatever its name is, Rey, which is supposed to be like...
Is that the female character?
It's a female version of Zero. It's not the female character that you're probably thinking of. The one you're probably thinking of is the role equivalent from Mega Man, which is Call.
Yeah.
And she's like dressed in pink.
That
little
that's
robot.
Actually the one I was
But the other one you see, you actually think it's a boy. It looks like a boy. You fight it in like a boss fight form, and then you unlock the character, and then you can experience the story all over again, just playing as this character, who's like a virused robot, who must devour everyone,
I actually like that character better than Beck.
I like playing as that character a lot more.
Too.
There's kind of a mechanic to it, too. The voice acting's terrible from that character, like it is in most characters in that game.
Well, the voice acting is atrocious in that game.
Yeah, there is
really
no redeeming quality about that. Like, no, not to put down the people who are doing the voice acting. I'm sure it has to do with writing and voice direction is the main problem there. But regardless, voice acting is awful. But playing as Rey, this Zero equivalent in Mighty No. 9 was a lot more fun. It's a very melee-focused character, very fast. You devour other enemies to lift or raise your constantly depleting health. And that added mechanic makes you want to get through the level super fast.
That actually sounds fun.
That it is really fun. And thankfully, that's actually a meaty chunk of... Because you literally are going back through and playing every level that you've already played as Mighty No. 9, but as this character. And it's maybe that should have been the full game.
Yeah. Story-wise, was the story...
Story's awful. It got to the point where I was loosely paying attention to it, and then it got as generic can become. And, I mean, Mega Man's never had a particularly great story, especially the early ones. But, I mean, this is just, it's bad. So predictable, so bad, and to the point where the end where I'm actively spamming the options or X button to try and skip it. Just let me just play. There's no point. You're wasting 5 minutes of my time.
Yeah.
Because the game's so chatty. It's super chatty, and when you have that bad voice acting put in with a game that's constantly talking in your ear, it's like, shut up, I want to play.
Yeah, I've heard that the voice acting's... I hate to say it this way, but a tad bit racist. Like, it feels almost like it's that Asian stereotype. Like,
yeah, it feels like a Western developed late 80s, early 90s cartoon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just bad. Just like they're pandering to their ideology of what they think these things should be like, but to trying to dumb it down for a 5-year-old.
Right.
Yeah, gotcha. So Mighty No. 9, we can sit here and complain about everything that's wrong with the game. It's not a great looking game. Voice acting's bad. It's painfully generic. Aside from that, I mean, that's Mighty No. 9. Andy, I mean, there's not too much to say on it. I mean, everyone's pretty much beat it, like a dead horse.
Yeah, the story sucks. The supporting cast of characters suck.
Yep.
It's
bad when we're demeaning ourselves to use terms like suck, but it's true.
Voice acting is bad.
Yeah, this game does not deserve an advanced vocabulary, in my opinion. So yep. I get where you're coming from with suck.
Yeah.
But yeah, moving on from that, Andy, tell me a little bit about Odin Sphere. You played quite a bit of that?
Yeah, a little bit. I've kind of been in a funk with gaming here in the past few weeks. Nothing majors came out.
It's because you're coming off of VR and you got the itch for more. You can't play regular games anymore.
Yeah, well, since the last recording, I think the last game I played was Doom. And then since then, I've game-flied Mirror's Edge and then a game called Odin Sphere. Mirror's Edge, it was a game.
Yeah,
sure.
I think John has a pretty good write-up on it. So
I think we covered it in detail in one of the last recordings.
Yeah.
And so Odin Sphere, I played a little bit of it. I don't know, it was originally released on the PS2. It's developed by Vanillaware, which is published by Atlus. Came out on the PS2 May 2007.
Yeah. God, I didn't realize it's been that long.
Yeah, and I didn't play it on the PS2.
Great game.
Yeah, I hear it was fun, but I think you guys had mentioned it suffered from some frame drops.
Yep.
So
it's a side-scrolling RPG brawler, and it brings that Vanillaware beauty to the game. It's all hand-drawn graphics, so it uses those hand-drawn sprites, And it was a great game. It was really hard to force yourself to complete it because you got to points in the game where the frame rate was so bad. I mean, you're talking 8 to 12 frames a second.
You know, I know I hear that from a lot of people, but I had the PS2 Slim, and I never had that issue with
it. I heard that as well. I heard people that had the Slim didn't have that issue. Me, I had the original release
the fat
model.
Version, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought Odin Sphere on PS2 was fantastic. It was probably one of the best looking games on the
PS2. Game. And now that they've done this, like, I'm a huge VanillaWare fan anyways. I really want to see all the VanillaWare games brought to modern consoles, especially, you know, brought to the PS4, Xbox One, whatever. But yeah, I mean, Odin Sphere. I mean, is there anything that really stood out for you to make it stand from different games or anything that you played recently?
Well, you know, I didn't even know about Odin Sphere until I saw it, I don't think, on my Amazon page. You know, it recommends stuff, and it popped up on my Amazon page. And just the cover artwork on the box alone was like, okay, what is this game? And I did research and found out, like, okay, I want to play this game. But, yeah, the game is fun. It's I like the fighting in it, the hack and slash. It was great.
And it's almost combo based too.
Yeah,
in a sense, it's like it's got like that combo light kind of thing to it.
Yeah, at the end of each combat encounter, you get graded on like, you know, E to S.
Yeah, yeah.
And
did it come across for you? A lot of people still don't understand that game is Norse mythology because it plays it towards the lighter end. Did that come across in it?
Yeah, well, your first character you play as is Gwendolyn, and she's a princess, and her father is King Odin.
Yeah.
So yeah, I did catch that. That, you know, it's one of those things where like it was a beautiful game, you know, hand drawn artwork makes me wonder why, you know, Mighty No. 9.
I know.
Yeah.
I would have killed for Mighty No. 9 to be hand drawn and have those beautiful sprites.
You know, it had a great set location. They were desert, snow, lava. The only thing that sucked about it was once you experience, you could play as five different characters. You don't get to pick which one you go through. It's kind of set in stone.
Yeah.
So you play as Gwendolyn first, and then I played and finished her story, and I moved on to the second character, which was some prince that gets turned into a rabbit.
Yeah.
I think his name is Cornelius.
Sounds about right.
And by the time you get to the second playthrough of the second character, you start to repeat all the areas, and all the mini bosses are the same.
That was my complaint with the game.
All the bosses are the same. So after I beat the first, you know, Gwendolyn story, I kind of stopped after that because everything kind of became repetitious.
It does make you, and I think with each character, you revisit the same area.
There's a few character specific areas that you'll go through, but not enough to really like, unless you really enjoy that style game.
Definitely,
it's really hard to push yourself through those.
And I do really enjoy that type of game specifically, but I feel like where they really hooked me was with, you know, one of their following games, which was Muramasa, the Demon's Blade, because they opened it up and made it a little more Metroidvania style. I feel like this one had dipped its toes in that type of genre, but Muramasa really, you know, went whole hog into it. And then with you know, they went a little bit of a different route and went for like an old style Dungeons and Dragons. I'll get it out in a second. They went for the old style. I give up. They went for the old style Dungeons and Dragons arcade play with Dragon's Crown.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, regardless of some of the
horrible art style-y
animations. Yeah. It's not bad art. It's art style there that is questionable and kind of, okay, really sexualized in some areas for the female characters.
In a grotesque, weird way.
Yeah, but man, that game was fun.
It was.
It was really fun. So, I mean, VanillaWare is top tier in my opinion, and I'm glad to see that some of their older games are making it to a modern light, and now I can maybe go back to Odin Sphere and play it through and not have to worry about those frame rate issues and maybe, you know, forgive it for some of its, you know, I don't know, I wouldn't say lacking game design, but, you know, repetition, at least. So, moving on for Odin Sphere, what do we have next, Kenny?
Yes, I've been playing Dirt Rally.
Okay.
That game's pretty fantastic if you like racing games.
Uh-huh.
I will say it's hard as hell.
Okay. Which, to be fair, all the Dirt games have been really hard, right?
Yeah, in a sense, like Dirt 2 and 3 added a like a rewind feature.
Okay.
So you could, like, you had X number of rewinds before you started losing points.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah, it was
fun. I only played the first Dirt.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things that it was neat, and I felt like it was comparable, but I felt like it was kind of thin in some areas.
Yeah. And I think if you're not a hardcore rally fan, you would feel that way about this one as well.
See,
like, one thing I really enjoy about it is you have engineers you can hire. Okay. So you're actually managing a team. You have like,
This is dangerous. You're getting to like RPG territory.
But it's really neat. It's like a proper rally. You, as you're going through, your car gets damaged, and you need to like, if you notice that your tires are taking a beating because of the way you drive, you need to hire an engineer that's specifically geared towards tires.
So can you get better engineers?
Yes, you can actually hire out more engineers as you go. And everything's tied to this in-game currency, which I think is cool in a way, but also because you can buy in-game currency, I feel like that's a little cheap. But man, it is a hard game. Like, there is no rewind button. If you do a restart on
the they took away the rerun.
There's no more rewind. This is like if you're a rally fan, this is pure blood rally. Like, they've got all the old rally class B, like, you know, the Ford Escort Mach 1, like all these old rally cars, plus the modern stuff.
And
like
if I remember right, I think even the original Dirt threw in some cars that weren't rally cars.
I mean, they had some stuff, yeah, that weren't exactly rally cars.
It just felt weird. Like, I mean, did they do that in this newest one?
No, I mean, from what all I've seen, it's all like proper rally vehicles. Okay. Like, I was saving up to get the Ford Fiesta RS, which is the in my opinion, currently the best rally car out there, next to like maybe the Golf.
You're not biased at all.
No, I definitely don't drive a Ford Fiesta ST. But yeah, it's just a fantastically good driving game. The driving feels good. It's hard. Yeah. Once again, like, you really have to pay attention to what you're doing, because if you go off the road or what have you, they penalize you 15 seconds every time you get off the road.
So they're like actively judging you as you're driving.
Yeah, like, okay. And it's one of those risk versus reward systems, like, which I really like. So there's a couple of there was one level I was playing through where you're listening to your co-driver a lot of times, because that's really the only way you're making it through these stages.
Yeah.
And like he'll tell you, like, be brave. Like, it'll be like hairpin right 90, which means it's a 90 degree turn on a hairpin. And he'll be like, be brave. So like, what that says to me is, just keep the accelerator head down and try your best to go around this corner as fast as you can.
That's really exciting.
And it's such a fantastic game.
So with a game like this, do you play it from the third or first person?
First person.
So you're hardcore about it.
Yeah, like
you want that VR experience.
Man, if I could get rally, if I could get Dirt Rally in VR, I think that would be all I would ever play. At that point, I honestly think I would buy like a steering wheel and just go whole hog.
I can't wait to see VR racing. That's gonna be really cool.
Yeah, I think that would be.
Andy, I ended up playing the original Dirt from I think PlayStation Plus gave it to us for free at one point. Did you ever play Dirt?
No, I've never played the series.
Okay, actually pretty cool.
Yeah,
like, one of those things. Like, I completely understand why people are fans of rally racing and the Dirt series specifically. Like, once again, I ended up getting that original game for free, and it's one of those things that I thought, like, if they can flesh this out, like, this is going to be really interesting. So hearing you say that, especially like with the RPG-esque, you know,
I definitely recommend like game flying it. It's once again, I will say, it is not for the light of heart, because it is going to be very frustrating. They put in, like, I don't know if you know how rally works, but with rally you have stages. Mm-hmm. So almost every rally has like 15 stages. They dumbed it down to 4.
Okay.
But these stages take about 4.5 minutes to drive from point A to point B.
Okay.
Per stage. So that's 5 minutes of driving that you have to do flawlessly.
Yeah.
And that's a lot when you think about it. Like, it's definitely difficult.
Yeah. So with stages, you're doing, so your race isn't done with one stage.
Right, you have 4 different stages. So,
is it tally based, or
it's
being
point
judged?
Based.
You're being judged on each one,
yeah,
and then the whole sum is, you know.
Yeah, so you're not racing other people. You're racing time. You're racing the clock.
Okay. So are there ever any other racers on the?
No, not.
Does it do like the shadow invisible ghost cars?
No, they kept it pure bred rally.
Okay, like, so your rally car.
Yeah, rally car go.
Yeah.
The only time you see other cars is if you're doing like a circuit race where you have like Joker laps, where you have to go off, like, they'll have like an extended version of the course that you have to take, and you have to take that one time through the whole race, because that's your Joker leg. So you have to do that once, and then you do the course the rest of the time. That's the only time you see other cars, and in my experience, that's when your car gets messed up the most.
Yeah,
because like, if you're sliding, you tap someone, your tire blows. And then you're driving on a rim the rest of the way until the race is done.
Yeah.
And then you've got to hope that by the next race, your team, because you have time limits on how long your team can work on your car before you get penalized. So, like,
dang.
Yeah,
that's hardcore.
Yeah, like, the damage is persistent between race to race. So, like, if you knock your tire down, like, I knocked my axle down to, like, 30%.
Axle. Okay.
Sorry, what did it sound like I said?
Yeah, you know okay. what it sounded like you
sure,
said.
Sure. But there was a jump. I jumped and I landed on the back part of my car really, really hard and completely threw out the back axle of my car. So, like,
crazy.
The next race.
So, the damage modeling is
pretty good.
It.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, at the end of that race, I had to have, like, I had to spend an hour and a half, which put me behind 35 seconds from the get go because you only had an hour for your team to work on your car.
Yeah. So would you say that this game is hardly casual?
Hardly casual. But yeah, that's pretty much my experience.
That's exciting. Yeah, I will definitely gamefly that one. Yeah, I can. Yeah, I actually really look forward to that now.
John, it says that we've got something that we've seemed to have talked about a lot on the podcast. Yeah, next.
Yeah. Why can we not stop talking about Overwatch? I want to hit this one real quick because we have talked about a lot of Overwatch, and I know a lot of people are actively playing it. The game has sold very well.
We've also streamed it a lot as well.
Yeah, Overwatch is still eating my soul almost nightly.
Sure.
I'm enjoying a lot of it. I'm branching out into new characters that I haven't usually played. I'm really enticed by the patches and updates that Blizzard are doing actively. I'm super excited. I just read that Blizzard is working on a lot of maps. And they said a good 70 to 80% of the maps that they make don't make it
into the game.
It won't make it into the game. But they are having that much fun, and they said it's not a bad thing. They said our brains are actively working, and we're working with the community and working with testing to bring you the best maps that we can. We're not, you know, throwing out like a hodgepodge of lawlessness here. We're focusing on gameplay and fun.
Right.
So that's really enticing, really exciting.
Yeah.
Overwatch is so good. I want to see more people get it. I really want to see this game get a MSRP price drop to like $40.
Yeah, and then I think 40. That opens it up to a whole lot of people.
Absolutely. I think that a wild new mass of people will come to this game.
But the problem is like, I don't think that'll happen for a while.
Yeah.
Because like right now in Korea, that game is going gamebusters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's actually surpassed League of Legends in like gaming cafe like play. That's pretty.
Yeah, what I'm telling everyone is keep an eye on this game for the holidays. You know, it will definitely go down to 40 or 30 somewhere. Pick it up. Overwatch is awesome. I'm actively trying to find time in my days where I have none to play this game. So, moving on for Overwatch. I mean, unless you had anything to say on it, Kenny.
No. It sounds like you're wanting to talk about Kirby Robobot? Is that how you say that?
Yeah, you do. Robobot. That is not a typo.
That looks like a typo.
No. It is not Kirby Robot. It's Kirby Robobot.
Okay.
Kirby Robobot's pretty awesome. Okay. I haven't really enjoyed a Kirby game outside of playing him in Smash Brothers since probably the original NES Kirby.
Yeah.
I didn't get into him in the first Kirby game, with the original Game Boy one, but the very first NES Kirby. It was one of those games that I'll kind of compare to, you know, VR recently. I dreamt about Kirby in the sense that it was the first game that let me do this, you know, take on the powers of the enemies and fight these things.
Yeah.
And it had really expansive levels. And I feel like the original one was much more difficult than the
ones that followed.
The recent ones, especially the ones that have released within the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 years. I feel like that's the biggest downside to Kirby is Kirby's gotten too easy, way too easy. That original NES Kirby game was where it was at. It was on point. It had the right difficulty with the bosses and the enemies and the framework and the architecture of the levels. I feel like I used to be a big Kirby fan.
Yeah.
And Kirby Robobot, maybe it's not perfect, but it may be the first Kirby game that really says, hey, just because Kirby's been down and out, you know, a few years, doesn't mean he's gone away. He's still bringing the big guns.
So I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. In Kirby Robobot, is a RoboCops?
There might as well be. No.
Because if I can play as Kirby Murphy, I'm sold.
Kirby Murphy.
I am sold on that game.
I like that. Stay out of trouble.
If I get to hunt down Red Foreman.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sold.
Oh, man, that is a whole different game. Kirby Robobot, basically, it starts out as your regular by-the-paces Kirby game. It does some really neat things with perspective with the 3DS. Visually, it looks great for a 3DS
game. Now, is it like that Kirby Epic Yarn? Is it that still that same like
no,
yarn?
No, this is like full full on like proper 3D Kirby. So,
so is it 2D, like 2D platforming, or like full on?
It's 2D side scrolling, but 3D graphics. Okay. So it's a 2.5D game, okay, technically, and it does some like some spatial things where like things happen in the background, or you will travel to the background or travel to the foreground.
Okay, so it's similar to like the Mario, or what was it, Paper Mario, that did
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it does a lot of that as well. Yeah. So you're shifting in between the two and doing neat things. But the big new boon for the game is it brings in this mech. So Kirby can utilize, you know, mechs in the game. And as soon as he hops in it, it transforms into a Kirby mech. Then what's really cool about the mech is that, you know, Kirby can suck in enemies,
right,
and, you know, he swallows them, and after he swallows them, he turns into them, or right, sort of. He gains their powers.
Right.
Well, the mech can do the same thing. It, instead of sucking them up and eating them, it digitizes them. And
okay,
it digitizes them and takes on their persona, and instead of it just being like a giant version of Kirby using the same powers, the mech has its own rendition of all the enemy's powers. So it's really neat. So, I mean, you can be walking around and suck up a sword enemy or digitize a sword enemy, and all of a sudden you're walking around with, like, flaming sword blades on your mech.
Oh, man, this sounds like a RoboCop Kirby game, and this is making me super excited, and I don't know why.
It is actually really fun. I recommend if anyone has a 3DS and even has, like, a vague notion or interest in Kirby to, you know, to rent it or, you know, pick it up on sale. I maybe not justify a full price for it yet, but it is just a good, like, afternoon or, like, you know, playing something before I go to bed type of game.
Okay.
And for a Kirby game, I feel like this is the best Kirby game
I've
seen.
It sounds like it's bred new life into the platform.
Yeah, definitely. It's very interesting. The story's not half bad. It doesn't do verbal storytelling. It's not really
right
in your ear like some of recent Nintendo games have been. You know, that problem of tutorializing to the umpth degree.
Right.
This game kind of just throws you in there. It gives you a story. It shows everything visually. You know, no voice acting or no dialogue you have to spam through. It's just basically, it expects you to be smart enough to pick up on what's going on.
Nice.
But it is really fun. I'm wildly impressed with what they've done with the mech, and the level design is what makes that really fun. So you're taking these abilities that you gain, and you're not only using them from Kirby's perspective, but there are active puzzles within the environment that you have to utilize Kirby, or they'll hop out and or hop in and use the mech, and then hop back out and go back to Kirby.
Yeah.
So it really has that, you know, that flow.
Yeah.
It has that gameplay flow that really makes the world feel fully fleshed out. And it's really exciting to see that come from, you know, Nintendo. I think this is what you and I have talked about. This is the, you know, back against the wall Nintendo that is starting to produce some heavy hitter games that are just fun. That,
yeah,
you know, getting back to that core Nintendo ideology of like, this is
make
why
fun
we make
games.
Imagine that, Nintendo making fun games.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's Kirby Rubber Ball. I just want to give it a brief mention.
Yeah.
What do we have next on the docket?
It looks like you want to talk about Star Fox Zero.
But I don't really.
Okay. I hear there's chicken bots in that game.
That's probably the best part of it. You know, Star Fox Zero, once again, another Nintendo game. This is not back against the wall Nintendo. This is, I mean, to be fair, it is Platinum Games, and I feel like this is
Wait,
B.
That was Platinum Games, really?
Yeah. Yeah,
what?
I feel like this is B or C tier, you know, Platinum Games, much like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Platinum Games game released in May. Star Fox, its biggest problem, I want to like it. Visually, it looks okay. They do some really neat things with taking the 3D graphics, and you know how in the original games they would pan the characters down and they'll look like puppets, right?
Yeah.
Well, it does that with 3D polygonal graphics, so they, you know, the characters talking do look like puppets, which that's really cool. The biggest problem this thing has against it, and the reason it is, I will say, unplayable, and this is, I'm going to wrap up Star Fox with this, is that the controls are terrible. Shooting and moving your reticle around and trying to function in the game without ramming your ship into walls constantly or hitting a cliff is just nigh impossible.
Does it control with, like, is it dual thumbstick controls, or is it Wii
you
Wii
control the,
and
you control the
nunchuck?
Ship. You control the ship with your left hand, with the left thumbstick.
Okay.
You shoot with your index finger on your right hand.
Okay.
And then how you're aiming is not with the right stick. You're aiming, and this is the only way to do it that I know of, is to use the gyroscope.
Oh, God.
So it's very confusing. It's hard to wrap your brain around. I think it's a left brain, right brain kind of thing. You're trying to move with a stick in one hand, and then you're also trying to aim around. And when you're aiming around with the gyroscope for the Wii remote, for the gamepad, it's only controlling the reticle. So it's always, and it's always being desynced too. So you're constantly having to press the button to resync where the center of the screen is for the reticle.
Man, that sounds terrible.
It's real bad. It's real bad. Yeah. Don't bother playing Star Fox Zero. Even if you're the most diehard Star Fox fan, I can't recommend it. Let me save you the trip to the store, or you know, the couple of pennants that you may throw at it for, you know, if it's on sale. Just go back and play the Star Fox that you loved. It'll save you some time and heartache and money.
Okay. I think up next I was wanting to do a little bit of talking about Final Fantasy XIV, if that's okay with everyone.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy XIV is a good game.
Mm-hmm.
It's
always been a good game.
Yeah, that's debatable. When they first released in 1.0.
I don't acknowledge that one. I'll give you
okay,
that.
Okay, so ever since around Reborn.
I imagine Reborn is where it was actually a game.
Sure.
Before that it was a weird alpha.
Yeah. That they had to completely rebuild.
Yeah, that's very true.
I went back and started playing that again just because I've been really wanting to get into an MMO. And, I mean, I've been playing a lot of Overwatch, and I wanted something that was a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So I picked
that's
up 14.
That's definitely different.
Yeah. I picked up 14, jumped in, and I have a level 60 monk that I've been playing for like 2.5 years now. So mm-hmm. Jumped on him again, and I've started getting all my gear up to date and all that stuff. And, man, I have to say, the new dungeons and the new level designs and all of that has been really well done.
Yeah. I have to go back to that game at some point in the future. The problem is finding the time and finding a weird dry spell in gaming to do that.
Yeah, for me, it's just I've been really craving a good MMO again. And I tried Black Desert Online with some friends, and honestly, that game was meh at best. But
I'm weird about MMOs, too. I feel like when I'm playing MMOs, I'm cheating on my spare time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Because it's such a time sink. Like, I enjoy MMOs, and I always have. You know, I've played ever since the original EverQuest. I've played way too many MMOs to even count, but the thing is, every single one of those that I've you know, thrown myself at, I always have that problem that, you know, I should really be doing something else right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for me right now, with the amount of stuff I've been working on with building this game for us and helping build this podcast, and on top of that, being a junior developer for a up-and-coming startup, like, I need that time to, like, just desync and...
Yeah, I see that.
Put something...
And that's like, a good thing about a nice MMO and, you know, spending, like, maybe 30, 40 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
Is just, it's like, cool-down time.
Yeah.
Because you can really just kind of zone out and just wander around, accept quests, complete quests.
And the great thing about 14 is, you know, the dungeon system works so well that, you know, you can pop in, play, like, a dungeon. And so far, I haven't ran into any multiple dungeons. Like, I've been out of the game so long, all the dungeons feel new to me.
Yeah. Well, and Andy, you're like my figurehead for MMO player, especially going back to WoW. Do you play them in a similar fashion? Is it for you like is WoW a downtime game, or is WoW like an active, like, seat of my, you know, pants kind of?
Yeah, well, I'm all in when I play MMO. I gotta go, like, balls to the walls.
Okay, so it's hardcore gaming for you.
Yeah, it's hardcore.
For me, that's relaxing, like sitting back in the chair. Yeah. I'm gonna have a sandwich.
With World of Warcraft, I've got to be like, my gear has to be top notch. I've got to be raiding. I've got to do all that stuff. If I'm not raiding, then I just don't want to play.
Yeah,
because that's my enjoyment from MMOs is dungeons and the raids.
Yeah.
So if I'm not able to do that or have time to do that, then I don't want to even bother with it. Yeah, I mean, it's fun to get to level cap. Whenever they raise the level cap, whatever, in World of Warcraft, it's fun to get that level cap.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, if I'm not going to be serious towards raiding, then I'm not going to waste any more time with it.
Yeah.
So that's how I feel about MMOs.
Because you're the type that the end game is the most important part.
Yeah, the end game to me is the funnest. It's where all the meat to the bone is
at. And I'm the opposite type. Like I said, I'm that sandwich eater MMO player who I want to sit down and I just want to take my time questing. And my biggest thing actually when it comes to MMOs is like I just end up exploring the world. Like,
yeah.
Admiring the landscape. And,
I think I'm somewhere in between both of you because I enjoy crafting a lot.
Yeah.
I enjoy dungeon crawling is probably the main reason why I go still back to 14 because 14 has some fantastic dungeons.
Yeah, it does. I'm the type, too, that, like, you know, I like to explore, but I'll go to a dungeon that's way too high level for me, probably get my butt kicked, but then level to a degree where I go through that level or go through that dungeon again and then wipe it solo just because that's where I get my enjoyment. I like to see the evolution of my character to like a supreme being.
Yeah.
So I think I'm the type of MMO player that maybe irritates Andy's type of MMO player. Like, dude, we got a raid. I'm just like,
no, I don't want a raid.
I'm going to go look at that hill over there. Yeah. Look at that pretty grass.
And Guild Wars 2 was perfect for that type of stuff.
That's very true. Very true.
Yeah. But yeah, that's been my experience going back to 14. I've enjoyed it. I'm working towards getting all my weapons up to snuff, which they're way behind at this point. But
oh, yeah. I'm sure they're completely outdated and useless compared to what's come in the expansions.
Yeah, and all the new guild stuff is really cool. You can still color your chocobo now, which was available before. But, you know, I've actually gotten into doing that now. I'm trying to get my chocobo into, like, a nice lime green. Just because lime green is the best color.
Just riding those chocobos, man. That's the way of life.
Yep.
We live to ride chocobos.
Yep. But yeah, it's good. Awesome. I'm really enjoying it.
Okay, guys. I think that wrap up our what you've been playing.
Yeah, I think that's everything. Unless anyone has anything else they want to say.
Andy,
I'm good.
All right. Guys, I want to thank you for joining us. If you have downloaded, if you have liked or shared any of our stuff in social media, I want to give you a special thank you. Thank you for your support in whatever manner it is, and I would like to continue to ask you to do so. If you have a friend, a spouse, a relative, whatever loved one you have, you know, share us. Get us out there. We're trying to make a nice little resurgence on a social media front and bring Hardly Casual to your home. Not a creepy way.
Not in a creepy way.
No, not in a creepy way.
Yeah, that's right. Once again, guys, I just want to thank you. And be sure and check out hardlycasual.net. Also, check us at Twitter @hardlycasual. And once again, thanks a lot. Over and out.